PBS, Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying here because we've got space engineering to attend. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. It is the 13th anniversary of Behind the Black's founding. Your subscriptions and donations are heartily welcome because we're watching the whole world look to outer space for prosperity and opportunity in the balance of this century and then the centuries ahead of us. All countries are involved. All commercial enterprises are involved. And we start with a success. India, ISRO, is a large program and a rocket called Chandrayaan 3. Bob, a very good evening to you. What is Chandrayaan 3? And do we pop the champagne for India?
We could partly pop the champagne, John. I'd like to pop the champagne, by the way, from your listeners, because they are, as always, been very generous, and I really appreciate the support that they're giving my website that I've been doing for so many years, and I appreciate you letting me get on the air to talk about space so many years. So, yes, Chandrayaan 3, it is a lunar lander rover that India is attempting to put near the South Pole of the Moon. This is their second attempt to do this mission. Chandrayaan 2 got to lunar orbit. It released its Vikram lander, but the lander failed just before landing. This is back, I think, in 2019. And so they've now launched their attempt to duplicate that mission. They did some revisions to the lander. This mission doesn't include an orbiter because the previous orbiter is still in orbit. So this is just the lander and the rover. It launched successfully. It will reach the. It will attempt a landing on the moon on August 13th. It's going to take about a week or so to get to the moon, but then it's going to take about a month to adjust the orbit to the right orbits for the descent. And once it descends, if it lands softly, successfully, the Pragyan rover will then spend about 2 weeks exploring the surface of this location in very high latitudes of the southern hemisphere of the moon.
What do we need to know about this region, Bob? What are they looking for?
I would say actually this is more an engineering experiment than a science mission. There's science, of course. They're going to be studying the ground. They'll learn more about the moon itself. This is not a spot where you're going to find any possibility of water of any kind. But for India, this will be demonstrating their capabilities to put a planetary probe on another planet. And so this is an engineering test more than anything else for them. It's kind of similar to iSpace's attempt with Hakuto R1 a few months ago, trying to land on the moon, and they almost got there, but they failed. And so India's trying to, once again, prove its capabilities. A rover like this that only lasts for the first lunar day can do only a limited amount of work, but you learn what you need to know, and then you build something more sophisticated later.
NASA has a budget, and Congress is looking very closely at that budget. How's it doing, Bob?
This is a very long, complicated budget process. It's now just beginning for the 24 budgets. And so the House and Senate Appropriations Subcommittees for NASA have both released their first preliminary budget recommendations. And both essentially leave NASA's budget more or less where it's been. They completely ignored the Biden administration's recommendation that they give NASA 7% more money, but they didn't cut the budget significantly. And that's important in the House because the House leadership is requiring this particular appropriations committee to impose a 28.8% cut in the total money it supervises. And those agencies include justice, commerce, and science. That's including NASA. So this House committee has decided that it's not going to take any of that significant cut from NASA. It's going to leave NASA alone. In other words, that probably means, I think that's just an indicating to us that the House is going to cut the Justice Department very, very heavily, John, very heavily. They're going to impose almost all the cuts in the Justice Department. I can't imagine why. But anyway, NASA has survived. In the Senate, it's more interesting. The Senate report had very harsh words for the Mars sample return mission that NASA's got significantly over.
I saw that, Bob. I saw that item. It seemed unusual to me because we've had missions in the past that have gone over budget, and extensive missions, and not so much attention. The Mars sample, the language was puzzling. It was about the difficulties of the Mars sample return.
Both Europe and NASA have been diddling along trying to come up with a mission design, and they keep changing it. They've now settled on helicopters and landers and launchers, but they're not sure who's going to do what. And it's really late in the game, and it looks like it's going to delay. And I pointed this out a few weeks ago. They've already raised the budget to almost, it's looking like it's going to get to $10 billion now. It's not even really, we're in the beginning stages, and it's already at $10 billion. So the Senate had very serious concerns. And since they do have to keep, and you know, the House pressure here is pressure on the Senate, no matter who is running the Senate. And the House is pretty firm here, so the Senate's looking to cut. It doesn't want to cut SLS and Orion and the Artemis program. In fact, it's very enthusiastic about that. That's where all the jobs are, and that's where they've been, the jobs program, for decades. And so the Senate is willing to get rid of the Mars mission because it's not producing that many jobs, so they can give money to the Artemis program, which produces more jobs.
Can the Mars sample return be outsourced? Can they assign it to a private enterprise?
See, that's the bottom line. I think that some people in Congress and the Senate are beginning to recognize that if they just wait a little longer and allow Starship Super Heavy to become operational, they'll be able to do this sample return mission for a lot less money and probably get it done quicker than NASA's going to do it with the present design that NASA's talking about. That's, I think, what's maybe part of the reason that the Senate is willing to be so harsh.
Bob, you and I read the technology coverage. We read all of it. I flip through Nature and Science magazine. We search the horizon for stories. I do not see anyone advocating SLS or Artemis. I don't see it.
No one's interested. No, the science community doesn't want to use SLS. You're talking about for just in general, you don't see any interest in Artemis and SLS?
Well, in the science journals, in the technology journals, and people who cover space, it's out of date, and it's expensive, and it doesn't go anywhere.
Let me quote from my post on Behind the Black. They chose to put money into SLS Orion instead of the Mars sample return. So instead, the Senate committee preferred wasting that money on Artemis and SLS. And that's just the point. It is really a bad waste of money. However, let's look at this closely. It's not a disaster because SLS, once again, once Starship Super Heavy starts flying, SLS and Orion is going to look ridiculous eventually, and they're going to cut that out too. What Congress needs is a replacement for SLS for the jobs. That's what will get there.
I don't see any support for SLS from the people who are most involved in outer space.
The aerospace industry has mixed support. There are definitely a lot of people that support it in the aerospace industry. The science community doesn't give a damn, doesn't care in the slightest. They want the sample return mission, yes, but they don't have the clout that the aerospace committee.
You're talking politics. I'm just saying common sense says that Mars sample return is critical to our understanding of where we're going.
The Mars sample, bringing a sample back is a critical scientific achievement. How you do it is the question, and I think the Mars sample return mission, as NASA is trying to plan it, is going to be a waste and a boondoggle and take forever. If they just simply wait a little longer and start and consider Starship Super Heavy, they'll get it done for a lot cheaper.
Let me try one more version. There's no one on the senator's staffs who is informed, who is advocating for SLS. I can't believe it. I have to believe
it. I don't agree with you there in the slightest. No, they have great pressure within the Senate from the aerospace community to fund this because it's big bucks. It's big bucks. It's the pork that they've been funding for decades. Remember, SLS is the Senate launch system, as you dubbed it. It is a Senate inspired program and conceived and pushed by the Senate. They're not going to give it up so quick.
But you're proposing this, and I take it correctly. This is a win or lose. To lose Mars.
I don't consider SLS a win. No, not at all.
No,
but this is where they're going.
What I'm saying, Bob, losing Mars is everything. Winning with SLS goes nowhere. It doesn't.
I don't agree with you there. I don't agree with you because I don't think losing that Mars sample return mission as NASA's planning loses us anything. It's as bad as SLS. It's not. By the time it flies, we're going to be scratching our heads like we do now with SLS. Why did they spend the money to do that when they could have done this?
You're presuming that I mean it's a NASA return. I'm just talking about the mission, however they get it done.
I'm talking about the mission as well. I'm saying that that the mission as planned is a stupid idea. The mission itself is a brilliant one and important, but you have to make some common sense about how you're going to do it, and they're not doing that.
Solid fuel engines for Japan failed. Why?
I don't know why it failed, but this is the second stage motor on Japan's upgraded Epsilon rocket called Epsilon S. They were doing an engine test. They hope to fly that rocket for the first time before the end of the year. That Japanese small sat rocket was supposedly designed to lower costs so they could get business to Japan rocket business, get some of the market share. Well, they did a rocket test and it failed. And this follows a long string of failures that Japan is dealing with right now, a launch failure for both their earlier version of the Epsilon rocket last year and then the launch failure of the first H-3 liquid fuel rocket in the spring. Nope, they had a problem. We don't know what the problem was, but it's probably going to prevent the launch of the first Epsilon.
But their loss is Rocket Lab's gain. How so?
That's exactly right. Rocket Lab this week announced a two-launch deal with a Japanese satellite company called Synspective. And this is not a new contract with Synspective. This will bring to six the number of satellites that Rocket Lab has launched for this Japanese company. They've already launched two satellites. They have a third scheduled, and they have this now brings to three more they're going to launch, six total. And this is an example. This Japanese company would certainly like to use a Japanese rocket company if it could, but there is no Japanese rocket company to use, and the government rockets that JAX is trying to provide have not been very successful, John. So Rocket Lab gets the deal.
What is Vulcan and why doesn't it work?
Well, I don't know if it doesn't work. I do know that it's been delayed again. The Vulcan rocket is ULA's replacement of its Atlas V and Delta family of rockets that was supposed to be competitive with SpaceX. It's 3 years behind schedule. Most of the delay was not ULA's fault. It was the fault of Blue Origin, which was building the two first stage engines for that Vulcan rocket called the BE-4 engine. However, this most recent delay is not due to BE-4, to Blue Origin. It's due to the fact that they were doing a tanking test of the upper stage of Vulcan in the spring, and the upper stage exploded. This is an upgraded version of the Centaur upper stage. It exploded. They've done some research. They had to modify the upper stage to thicken the tank's walls, and that has required them now to admit something we knew already, that the first launch of Vulcan will not occur before the end of this year. I mean, it'll end. It's supposed to be now the fourth quarter, but I'm betting it won't. It'll happen probably early next year, making it 4 years behind schedule, John.
The regulatory environment in Great Britain is not conducive to success. Virgin Orbit failed because it couldn't get cleared to fly. Are they going to do something about it?
I don't know if the UK government is going to do anything about it, but a bunch of MPs, ministers, parliament ministers, put together a committee report stating reluctantly that the space regulatory framework in the UK is messy and a mess and confusing and needs to be straightened out. Their report was kind of funny because initially they expressed concerns about the delays that led to Virgin Orbit's launch being postponed and eventually bankrupted the company. It took 15 months to give them a launch license. But they concluded there was no evidence that the regulatory system contributed to that failure. But they also said that there's insufficient coordination between the large number of regulatory bodies involved in licensing launches, and this has got to be fixed, and fixed in a hurry. I find it amusing that they say in one breath that the bureaucracy didn't cause the problem, and then in the other breath, the bureaucracy caused the problem. That's typical politicians talking out of both sides of their mouth. Nonetheless, it's not clear whether this is going to change anything. They're begging the parliament to make some changes, and we have evidence of that. Orbex is a company that has a 50-year lease from the Sutherland Spaceport in Scotland to launch from there, and they want to do their first launch by the end of the year. And so in February of 22, that's 17 months ago, they submitted their launch license permit to the Civil Aviation Authority in the UK. And it's now 17 months later, and they still haven't gotten their permit for a launch that's supposed to happen before the end of the year. UK's two spaceports cannot compete if it's going to take 1 to 2 years for each launch to get a launch license to be approved. And that's where we are right now in the UK. I already see evidence that companies are moving away from considering the UK as a launch site, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. It's Happy Birthday, Behind the Black. 13 years later, we're going to science. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.